Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. As Boeing machinists strike, the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service says it will convene new talks early next week. CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
It will essentially bring production of several major airliners to a grinding halt, including the 737 MAX.
It happened on August 29th, but the U.S. Central Command has just announced today that 14 Islamic State group operatives, including four ISIS leaders, were killed in a western Iraq raid. One of the leaders was responsible for overseeing all operations in Iraq. A new report on the emergency response to last year's wildfire on Maui that killed 102 people finds that even with days of warnings about critical fire weather, no action was taken. KGMB-TV Ashley's Nagoka.
The report says there was a widespread lack of preparedness among government, privately owned entities and residents, and an underinvestment in wildfire prevention, public education, and infrastructure.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Authorities confirmed that remains found recently in Two Rivers belong to a long-missing three-year-old boy. Terry Bell reports.
Two Rivers Police Chief Ben Minard breaking the bad news on Friday.
It is with a heavy heart that I announce to you today those remains were identified as Elijah Vu.
The three-year-old boy was reported missing in February. Elijah's mother and her boyfriend are still in jail, charged with child neglect, though not directly linked to his disappearance. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
A complaint says a state senator broke federal rules during his run for Congress. The Campaign Legal Center says Andre Jacques of DePere transferred money from his state campaign committee to his campaign for 8th District Congress. The complaint asks the Federal Election Commission to sanction and fine Jacques. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Many people struggle with a lot of these things, though, like making and maintaining friends, making new friends. Mm. These are things that actually, like, I'm very envious of the people that are good at making friends or can just start a conversation with just about anybody.
What people don't understand is that's why James hired me and Melissa, not because, you know, we're talented or anything. He's lonely.
Very.
That's how he gets friends. He hires them to work with him.
My friends' contact list, it is three.
Weekdays from 8 to 10.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to take a look back at the DNC convention. We got so much content, so many interviews, so many people we got to talk to while we were there for the four-day convention. Shook hands, kissed little old ladies. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. And look, one of the greatest things about doing those is people coming over and say, hey, I listened to you here or there. We had a couple of people who came up and said, the only reason I am here is because of the show. Moved me into action, wanted me to get involved, wanted me to go run to be a delegate, to run to be a school board member. It was really, I love these events. And this convention, like none other, extremely energetic and a lot of labor voices. And today, that's what we're going to spend our time talking to some labor leaders all across the labor spectrum. And really what the convention meant for organized labor and the idea that I've been talking about for years. I hear people say, oh, we need a labor party. Yeah, not going to happen. Much as I would love the idea of having a labor party, it's in our system, it's never going to happen. So what you do is you take over one of the major parties, which is what looks like they're doing. Not done. Looks like they're doing. And that's a good thing. I heard something like 20% of the delegates were union members. That's a pretty good start for taking over one of the major political parties. And look, for me, this is all about making lives better. So when I hear people talking about from from every point of view, how we make workers' lives better. That to me is extremely exciting and a step in the right direction. So today, as I said, we're going to speak to some labor leaders, get some thoughts on how things are working out, some of the things the Biden folks have done, some of the stuff that the Trump folks want to do to us, and you know maybe how we make sure that that doesn't happen. So I want to hear your thoughts. Thank you. While we were gone for the week, thank you for the wonderful things that were being said about our coverage. We're going to continue doing just that today on the program. We're going to talk to some of my favorite interviews from our labor leaders. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Tony Totti from the UAW. Stick around. Thanks for tuning in to the Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while we're spending time here in the convention talking about how we're going to move the world forward, we're going to make this a country worth handing off to our children, I understand there's been tragedy in a workplace of auto workers that, look, while Sean Fain was on stage talking about how we're going to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, unfortunately there was a death in a Toledo auto plant. And I want to bring on our friend Tony Totti, the president of UAW Local 14 out in that area, to share some thoughts while we're here in this convention and maybe what we need to be doing to make workplaces safer again. Tony, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to see you at the convention. A very somber, sad day, especially for the folks over in Toledo. Sadly, a Jeep member lost their life as a local 12 member. And we just always remind our workers and every worker, your safety is the overriding priority, and do whatever you can to work in a safe manner. Your life's more important than the product. And now we're, going to have to mourn as a labor community around the family and just remind everybody to, make something out of a terrible situation. Always look at your surroundings at work. You deserve to go home in the same condition that you came to work.
And we know that this will be investigated, yeah. that won't be covered up, because obviously there is a union there to make sure that it's all front and center. We find out how to make sure it never happens again.
Exactly. Continuous improvement. We talk about the wages and everything else, but when you look at unions, health and safety is probably the best thing that we do. And we negotiate it. You look at OSHA and everything else. That's because first we negotiate it, and then we try to, because we fight for everybody, not just ourselves, get it passed into law. So we will find out what happened here and try to prevent it from ever happening again, not only at our workplace, but every workplace.
Our heart goes out to the family and also the coworkers there, because that does filter down. We've had people in my workplace who have had accidents at work and have perished because of it. And it does affect everyone.
Yeah. It changes your workplace forever. You know where it happens. That he was a good guy, and his friends, it just changes you.
There's no segue that I can make that makes that any better, but I want to get your thoughts on what's going on here at the convention. Yep. Your president, Sean Fain, gave what I thought was a great speech. I keep asking how I get one of those T-shirts, because, look, I think every union should put that logo on the shirt. Give me some thoughts on, as a local president, what do you think of your international guy speaking there?
He had a great night. We're proud of him to get our message across, put corporate America on notice. And when we fight, we win. And that's not just a slogan that we say. That's our reality. And, we need to get to, when you take on one of us, you get all of us. And that's why we're trying to have our contracts expire at the same time, to get more like Europe. When it comes to messing around and finding out when you don't treat workers right, don't pay them correctly, in all of the things. So great night for labor when Sean Fain talked on Monday.
Well, this has been a great convention for labor, and I've been reiterating this time and time again, because
It is front and center in everything that we're seeing, because I think Democrats have finally found their roots.
Yeah.
I think they finally found the secret sauce that built that prosperous working class and that that ability to do better, and for them politically. So I'm thrilled that they found this. Yeah. My hope is they take it out of this convention and move on legislation and live it.
Yeah. You know, and part of unions, especially our union, you know, it's Article 41, Section 3. It's our duty as members to vote. And when you look at the UAW, you have a million members. Just think if all million members vote. You know, we advocate them to vote. We don't tell them who you have to vote for. We do make our recommendations, and that's with Harris Walls, and because they support us. And
well, because that's what leadership is.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and look, and this is where I've had a problem with my union's president.
Yep.
Leadership is about what's doing in the best interest of the institution and the members.
Yes.
Look, at the end of the day, we know what the Trump administration was. Mm-hmm. We know how bad they were. They're telling us how bad they're going to be. True leadership is looking at that and going, yeah, we don't want that.
Yep.
We're going to look at these other people, and these other people are telling us, we're going to do what you need. We're going to have your back. It seems simple to me, but, you know.
And part of that leadership is to stand up to members. You know, when you look at it, in our country, we're a two-party system. So 40% over here, 40% over here, and what's in the middle. So when you stand up and you make that endorsement based on principles and facts and past actions, you know, we need to stand up to our members that may not agree to us or with us, and we need to take on that heat. And especially with the, you know, with Trump, you know, a lot of people are really, they're voting against their own interest. And like you said, you look at Trump and all the appointments that he made to the Supreme Court and the NLRB and all the other things. It's anti-worker, and you just look at X with what he did with Elon Musk. They're bragging about firing people and laughing about it. If that doesn't tell you that these people aren't for working people, so you can vote for that guy if you're a member, but it's not going to be off union principles, and that's what we need to be strong about. We need to stand up and be proud of who we are and talk about our core principles.
Let me ask you this from a different perspective, because, you know, you look at the what's the matter with Kansas argument, that they are voting in their interests.
Yeah.
Their interests are, you know, guns or your God or, you know, spaghetti monsters. because you've allowed them to think of something beyond their wages, their hours, their conditions, their standard of living, because they know you're going to go out there and fight for them.
Right.
They know that you're doing a great job and you've given them this standard of living and they're going to be okay. Because I hear this all the time in my union. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not us.
Right.
We're going to be fine until we're not.
Exactly. And that second term, you know, it's like President Obama said, you know, the sequel's always worse. And they got the playbook. It's 2025, and it's trash. And until you're experiencing it, you know, it's easy to say, oh, don't worry about it or we'll be all right. Look at what happened the last time. We're all right now. The writing's on the wall, and you can't put your blinders on anymore. And I love the fact that unions are calling truth to power and standing up to it, and we're not afraid of them.
Yep.
So we'll take them on if we have to, but we just need to get back to the streets, old school, door to door, make the phone calls and do all the things, because it's less than 80 days away, and we just need to go all in.
No, and look, unions are all about their members.
Yep.
It's about the working class. It's about, you know, I go back to the, you know, the original roots of labor, the mine workers starting hospitals and schools, and the steel workers having hospitals, and all fighting for sabbaticals to go get education.
Yep.
There's so many of those things, and I know your union, you're part of something that, you know, is trying to create a, well, it's a high school, right?
Oh, yeah.
That trains a generation to work on the coming technologies of EVs. That's the stuff we should want more of.
Yeah, we just cut the ribbon on that thing 2 weeks ago, and it's an EV school, state-of-the-art. You know, it doesn't only impact the high school kids, any unemployed, underemployed, any displaced auto worker, and the dealers from the mechanics from the dealership gets to go there and get trained as well. So we're going to fully utilize that facility, and that's what unions do. We created that.
Could that have happened during the Trump years?
It would have happened without Trump. You know, when you look at it, you know, Marcy Kaptur, a great congresswoman.
Love Marcy Kaptur.
Helped get the funding for that, and Joe Biden signed it into law, and we got it. You know, Trump hopefully he'd be asleep at the wheel, and he wouldn't notice if we got it in, because our representatives fight no matter who's in there. It's just easier to do when we win as a team, and that's why we need to get Waltz and Harris in there.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. This is your first convention, right?
It is. Great time. Oh, it's so electric. Last night was amazing. The first night was great. It'll be good to see former President Clinton and Waltz tonight. I was born in Minnesota, so I'm proud of our connection. Somebody said, parents in Minnesota say you can grow up to be vice president, because this will be our third one. So
there you go.
Great convention. Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Anytime.
You.
Tony Toddy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right.
Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that Fannie Sellens and Joseph Starr Zaleski were murdered while standing up for workers' rights. Fannie was born in New Orleans. She married a garment worker in St. Louis. After her husband's death, she became involved in the labor movement in the garment industry in Chicago. The United Mine Workers of America recognized her organizing abilities. As a mine organizer, she worked in the Allegheny Valley in Pennsylvania. Mine operators in the area were known to be strongly opposed to union organizing. Mine managers made open threats against Fannie. Despite these threats, she stayed. And when the miners went on strike, she was there with them on the picket line. 6 weeks into the strike, she was shot and killed by company gunmen. Also murdered was a miner, Joseph Starr Zaleski. Fannie was just 47 years old. No one was ever convicted for the crimes. The United Mine Workers Journal reported on her death. The article declared two fallen picketers had been, quote, shot down in cold blood without provocation and without excuse. The article remembered Fannie as well known throughout all of the region as an angel of mercy among the families of working miners and other laboring men. A disturbing picture of Fannie's bullet-ridden body was taken at the morgue. In the picture, her head is smashed in. That picture was hung up in the union offices across Pennsylvania as a reminder of the cost of the struggle. The United Mine Workers dedicated a memorial to Sellens at her gravesite at Union Cemetery in Arnold, Pennsylvania. It has become an important site for annual Labor Day celebrations. Let us not forget those who came before us so that we may see where we are heading. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, as we've said here many times, it's great to see people in person that you've had on the program a number of times. And one of those folks, one of our friends from the Painters Union, Jimmy Williams Jr., he's the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org, the website, if you want to take a look at what they do. Jimmy Williams, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, Rick, good to see you in person.
It is good to see you in person. And this is an incredible event, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Really is. And the energy in this hall, just in town in general, you can feel it. You can really feel it.
No, the energy is palpable. Have you been to these before?
You know what? This is my second convention, but first time being a delegate. First time being an actual delegate.
So what's that like?
Being a delegate? You know, it's different because you're like, wait a second, I'm not a party insider. You know, I'm a labor leader. I'm a union guy. But being able to see just how the party is trying to put together the platform, being on the inside to be able to influence the platform and you know, just having those conversations within the Democratic Party, it's an interesting week for sure.
No, this is exactly what I've been talking about almost every year I've been doing this show for the last 19. If you want to have a labor party, maybe take one of the two over. And you doing, being a delegate as a labor leader, kind of what I'm talking about.
Hey, Rick, I'll tell you, that's the plan. I mean, it has to be the plan. First off, We know that there's no chance you can take over the Republican Party as it's certainly set up right now. There's not even a door to be open. But within the Democratic Party under President Biden, we saw the shift towards labor. You saw the things that the administration has done over the last 4 years. Honestly, the future of the labor movement is we have to remain not only relevant, but we have to be a huge part of the Democratic Party. I heard a stat here this week, 20% of the delegates here are union delegates. We got to get that number to 40, 50, 60. That's how you take over the party.
No, absolutely. But the messaging, look, I was at the 2016 convention. There was a labor presence, but it seemed to be an afterthought. I followed the 2008 convention, the 2012 convention. Again, seemed like, an obligation. This seems organic. This seems authentic. This seems real. And look, we'll see in policy, obviously, but the vibe here is on the labor side.
Yeah, when you look at, like, Monday night was union night. There's no doubt about it. When you have labor leaders from across the labor movement on the stage being able to address the delegates, then you had Sean Fain being able to have a primetime spot to talk about, labor's issues, and then Joe Biden closing it as the most union president ever with chants of Union Joe coming down that were organic. That was not, no way was that planned.
No, and it's a message that I think needs to be shown in the broader public, and I hope people are out there watching it. I hope that it's just not in this bubble. I'm hoping it's getting out, especially to your members, because ultimately you're here to represent your members as well. What are you hearing from them in this cycle? What are you hearing about the Harris-Walz ticket? Anything positive? Anything negative? What are we hearing?
I'm hearing more positive than I would have assumed, because we've talked, and you and I have talked about this over the course of the last 3-4 years, about just how split our membership has been, and especially with the way Donald Trump approaches the working class. And I was surprised, because I thought there would be a little bit more pushback and maybe even have longer and harder conversations. Truth be told, that energy is actually making its way into our membership, too. And we're seeing it. And I didn't really think that was going to happen that short, but it is. And I think people wanted a change. They did. I saw a stat that this is the first time since 1976 that there's not a Bush, Clinton, or Biden on the ballot.
Yeah. No. And that's one of those things where you go, someone who's radically normal, like Tim Walz, Kamala Harris, who came up through poverty, near poverty, went to an HBCU. These are radically, extremely normal people.
Yep. And you see it. You've seen it in what I always call it like it is. Too many politicians are scripted and have been over the years. And I think Joe Biden kind of transcended that. And I think that shift away from the scripted drama of elections and really telling the story. Last night, Tim Walz, and seeing his family and seeing his entire life be put on the stage last night just really brought, tear to my eyes.
Had to. Because you can see your family there, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
I mean, I look at Tim Walz and I see my family. I see my neighbors. I see someone who is, like I said, radically normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the American public needs. But within the labor movement, Tim Walz was such a great choice because it does bring our values to the table.
Now, you talked about your members and moving this. And that's not surprising because I got to tell you, the more you educate about the Trump years, and for labor, for you, Trump years were not a great time.
No. And everybody, the facts still matter, right? It isn't going to be just cult of personality. And while right now everybody's riding high here, from within the party and getting that buzz of having a new ticket, that doesn't last forever. And the policies still matter. And when you look back at the Trump years, I mean, they really, really, really did nothing to help working class people.
Now, you're a building trades guy. Clearly, I think page 604 of the Project 2025 targeted right at you and the rest of your tradesmen. To eliminate prevailing wage, to eliminate project labor agreements, and then you get further into the labor chapters that they had, basically destroy and dismantle unions and bring us suggestion box unions or Mother May I unions. Is that playing? Is that something you're getting out to your membership?
Yeah, I mean, Project 2025, to a lot of us that spend time reading policy and saying things like that, it's like, you know, this is a joke. But for our membership, you know, being able to take snippets and really show them what this is the agenda. And don't forget, for a building trades union, the elimination of the registered apprenticeship programs is also in Project 2025. And those are the things that our members care about the most, because they value their hard work in their apprenticeship programs. They value their collective bargaining agreements, the ability to have prevailing wage, project labor agreements. Those things resonate.
So the question that I keep asking people, is it the negative that sells or the positive? Because we know what Donald Trump did during the 4 years. We know what Project 2025 says. But we also know what Joe Biden did during his term. We know the infrastructure bill was pushed for. He wanted a much bigger, much chunkier, much broader investment. But we got that. Do your members lean towards the positive, hey, I'm working, or the negative, hey, they're going to take my where do you see this going, or is it both?
I think it's always both on some levels, because that's the world we live in today. But we've chosen to go the positive route. And I think you have to, as labor leaders and within the movement. Our job is to educate. Our job is to educate, to agitate, to organize. And you can't do that if you're constantly talking negative. You have to be able to show a better way forward. And to us, we've chosen the path of, we're going to deeply educate our members. And at the end of the day, they got to make their decisions. Look, that doesn't mean sometimes you got to point out the negativity that's on the other side. We absolutely have to do that as well. But from here till Election Day, it really does have to be about educating the membership about the real truths.
Now, I look at the Biden administration and all of the things that I think have been transformational. I think Biden has moved the ship in a direction that's going to move this country forward and hopefully revive the American dream of a middle class existence. Do you see those 4 years of Biden translating into 4 or 8 years of Harris? Do you see a seamless shift, or do you maybe see something different out of Harris? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the unknown that exists right now. Because it is new. The ticket's new. The energy's new. And maybe that creates opportunities for us to also think differently, which excites me as an organizer. But there's no doubt that carrying on the legacy of President Biden's, what will go down in history as a historic, historic four-year presidency, has to be a main topic for us within the building trades and within the AFL-CIO to continue to advocate and push what will be the administration to look into the future too.
No, and look, you know, I know there were a number of Teamsters here on the stage, talking about Biden saving their pension, which is a huge thing for multi-employer pension funds that Biden did. In fact, got something better than the Butch Lewis Act was asking for. The fear becomes, in my view, as someone who benefited from that, from having a Teamsters pension, that Trump and, well, Tim Scott has said they're going to repeal that. They're going to undo that. Is that possible, do you think, with a Trump administration?
No, I don't. I don't, because that's the value of legislation. And what Joe Biden was able to accomplish is simply amazing. To be able to pass that many bills at a time with such a divided government really is amazing. And to wait to use reconciliation after passing the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the ARP to still be able to move on the Inflation Reduction Act and using the tools of the Senate and being able to use reconciliation, that's truly monumental. So, no, I don't believe they can, because those loans have already been given to those funds. Those funds have already been shored up. And if Trump and his people think they can roll that back, I don't think it's true. It's just to be able to just put those talking points out there.
Yeah, just, again, to divide us. So last line of questioning I've got, because obviously we've been talking about Harris and Walz and talking about the things that they want to do. They're going to be able to do nothing without a Senate, without a House. The down ticket, I think, just as important. Thoughts on where things should go here?
Listen, I mean, first off, we heard from what I believe is going to be the next Speaker of the House in Hakeem Jeffries last night. And I really believe there is a good shot at taking back a majority in the House. I do. I think the Senate's going to be a slugfest. I just think it is. And I do think that there's a chance But I think we have to prepare ourselves for a continued divided government, which is all the more reason why we need to have the White House, because all of the policies on the things like we spoke about, like pension relief, like implementing the bipartisan infrastructure bill, like following through on the Inflation Reduction Act, if we can remain in the White House, we will be able to see that legacy through for at least the next 4 years.
That's why elections matter. And as Obama said, don't boo, vote. Get out there and vote. But Jimmy Williams Jr., I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know you got a lot to do. Thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Rick, you're better looking in person.
Wow, compliments will get you just about everywhere. Jimmy, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think coming out of this convention? Are you hearing it? Are you hearing the positivity? Back after this. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds thicken for tonight, maybe a stray storm late, lows upper 50s. And a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow with pop-up showers and storms, high around 80. Mostly sunny and a high in the mid-80s Sunday. Lots of 80s ahead looking into next week. Next rain chance midweek. It's 69 degrees right now.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So rebuilding America, that's the goal, right? You come out of the Biden-Harris administration with that infrastructure bill, putting people back to work, rebuilding our roads, our bridges, broadband across the nation. All great stuff. But the question is, how do we pick that up? How do we move it forward? And on Monday night, you saw a lot of labor leaders up on stage saying, hey, this is the way forward. One of those people, Brent Booker, he is the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. And I've got him sitting down with me here right now. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on. It's been a busy week, but it's been a great week for us.
Oh, look, yeah. In this hall, we have been inundated with folks coming by saying hello, and it's a great, great time. The excitement you can feel. But I got to tell you, on Monday night, you killed it, knocked it out of the park.
It was an honor to be up there, to be on that stage with other labor leaders, to have the Democratic Party invite us on that stage to talk about our story and talk about what the Biden-Harris administration has done and then what the Harris-Walz administration will do for us. It was a moment I'll never forget, and it was an honor for me to be the representative of 530,000 hardworking men and women in the United States and Canada.
No, it was a great moment. But let's go and talk about what the Biden-Harris team did, because I don't think we talk enough about the jobs that were created, the infrastructure that's being rebuilt, and the way that it's being done with project labor agreements and with prevailing wage. That these are making lives better, aren't they?
Absolutely. The first thing he did, and I oftentimes forget to include this in the list, saved our pensions, you know, through the American Rescue Plan, and to ensure that union members across all trades are going to be able to continue to retire with dignity. So do that in the first 3 months, follow that up with the infrastructure bill, with the CHIPS and Science bill, with the Inflation Reduction Act, just creating jobs, creating opportunities for middle-class Americans and promoting union jobs, good jobs, careers in the construction industry.
No, as a Teamster for 35 years, the saving the pension thing was a big thing, and I tend to internalize that, but it was all multi-employer pension funds.
Absolutely. It was over $85 billion to pick up some of the pieces that weren't necessarily created by the trustees of the pension funds. It was the rules that were put in place by not-so-friendly administrations, and to have this administration step in literally in the first 3 months, when for the last 20 years we've been fighting for pension relief, and we've you know, the federal government has given money to Wall Street. They've given money to car companies in corporate America. For the first time in my lifetime, they put money in and ensured that the money stayed in the pockets of working families.
Yeah, and helped workers. And look, you know, this has been 40 years in the making, 40 years of bad conservative supply-side voodoo Reaganomics. This assault on organized labor created this crisis. And good on Joe Biden. Barack Obama could have done it. Donald Trump could have done it during his 4 years. But it was Joe Biden who did it.
He did it, and he led from the front. He did it from day one. And look, he's going to have a lot of legacies for the 4 years he had as president. For me and my perspective, look, there's an incredible piece of legislation. We mentioned infrastructure, IRA, CHIPS science, prevailing wage. He gave us a seat back at the table and made sure that labor was a priority. When you saw him speak on Monday night, the most passionate he got when he was talking about labor unions and what we were doing and what we stood for and how he's bought in his entire career. So that's his legacy in my mind, is to make sure that and putting labor front and center at the DNC convention. It's been a long time since labor's front and center at the DNC convention. Every speaker in there, every elected official is talking about the working class, talking about labor unions and building this country from the basis of making sure labor's there and there. So I'm beyond thrilled with what we've had the last 4 years and what we can expect in the next eight.
That is the hope, because look, I've been saying the only way we're going to actually reunite this country is if we reunionize. I go back to my grandparents' generation. They didn't agree on every issue, but they agreed on wages, hours, and conditions. They agreed on opportunities for their children. They agreed on job security and the freedom that comes with that.
Yeah, and these are around the kitchen table issues, yep. Right? I mean, and that's some of the frustrating things I have when we go across the aisle and we meet with people on the other side, you know, the other side of the aisle, and be like, are you against American workers making a middle-class wage? Are you against, you know, corporations paying for health care and paying for pension for their workers? Like, what are you against here? And you never really get a straight answer until they get their talking points from the talking heads on other cable news from non-union, anti-union contractor associations that whatever money's not going into the workers' pocket, it's going into their own and going into their shareholders. So right. There's something in the air, there's something in the atmosphere, and look at our favorability rating of unions, over 70% now. And
well, I think coming out of the pandemic, people, I think the sacrifice, the struggle, the pain and all that of the last 30 years just came to a head during the pandemic, where there was no more give, there's no more bend. And I think people have finally said, look, there's got to be a different way. What worked? And I go back to my grandparents' generation, the World War II generation. They came home from World War II. They fought fascism overseas, and they went to the shop floor, and they built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity. And we can redo that again by what we're seeing in this convention. And I'm thrilled to see Tim Walz on the ticket. I'm thrilled to see Kamala Harris at the head of it.
Absolutely. And Governor Walz called me, I don't know, a week, 10 days ago, and said, hey, look, I've been selected as vice president, and laborers were was the first union who supported him when he first got into politics, and I've had a long relationship with him, and he's been a great governor for working families in Minnesota. And what he wanted to relay to me was, I take Joe Biden's legacy on labor serious, and he's going to pass the torch to me to make sure that I continue his vision of building America from the middle class out. And unions built the middle class. And he was like, I'm not going to let Joe Biden down. I'm not going to let LIUNA down. I'm not going to let the other unions down. I'm encouraged by that.
That's the message.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what that will sell, because Tim Walz, I live in a rural, fairly rural area. Tim Walz sells to a lot of even my red hat friends, because he's like any other. He's how I put it at the beginning. He's extremely radically normal.
He's extremely, that's better than I was going to say. He's relatable.
Yep.
He's everybody's uncle at the family barbecue. He's everybody's dad, everybody's grandfather that you spend 5 minutes with him, you want to spend five more minutes with him. And there's not a whole lot of politicians in my experience that you can sit down and relate to, that you want to go, you want to have a beer with him and just tell stories about when you were a teacher, when you were in the military.
Tell a beer, a keg.
Yeah, well, I'm keeping it clean today. But he's one of us. He's a working person, and he relates to working people, and his policies have shown he doesn't need someone to hand him talking points to talk about labor. He can talk about his career and how he talked about, you know, what he's done for labor his entire career.
So let's talk about your members. You know, LIUNA, one of the bigger building trades unions in the country. Like a lot of building trades, you've got a lot of Republicans members, a lot of Red Hat members as well. Will this play with them? Do you think that this is something they will come to? Because I look at what has come forth with this Project 2025. I look at what Trump did during his 4 years. On the labor front, he had an abysmal, horrible record. This Project 2025 plan is all about destroying you and your union. Will this play? Do you think they'll get it as you're going out and educating?
That's the key part, is we got to go out and educate. And we got to go talk to our members. We got to meet them where they're at. We got to go meet them at their kitchen tables and the communities where they're living, on the job sites. Talk to them in the morning. Talk to them after work. Make sure that when they're on an infrastructure project that was funded by the infrastructure bill, that they understand their paycheck and use terms that they're familiar with. That's some of the appeal to Donald Trump. He talks to our members in language in which they relate to, and we got to get away from the acronyms of Washington, D.C., and just go talk to our members about your paycheck, your health care, your pension. All of that's brought to you by the infrastructure bill. But let's not say that. Let's just say, hey, this job you're on, you got your
Joe
paycheck
Biden
because
did that.
Joe Biden did that.
At the beginning, before the money hit the road, I said, you know, the thing they were slapping all over the gas pumps, you know, that Joe Biden did this, get those in 20-foot statues and put them on every road project across the country. And weirdly enough, Tim Walz did that.
Yeah.
Which is another thing I love about the guy.
No, and we know the danger of the other guy. Like, look at the interview he did a couple weeks ago with Elon Musk. He's saying the quiet part out loud now.
No, they're screaming the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, and for the first time, he's telling the truth, and I believe him. And when he talks about firing workers, when he talks about rolling back the infrastructure bills in Pennsylvania, I believe him when he says that. And that's what Project 2025 is. They put the blueprint out there. So when they do, we just have to talk to our members. We've got to show them that and then show them, hey, when he was president, yeah, he said he was for you, but here's the things he did that he was the opposite. He was against us.
No, that Project 2025 is, you know, you go through and you can keyword search it. It's 900 and some pages. You don't have to read all of it. Find, you know, put your keyword in and it'll take you right there. But I think it was like page 604 that goes after you specifically, prevailing wage and project labor agreements. They want to do away with them entirely.
They want to get rid of them. And that's the control of big business, of the bad side of big business on Wall Street, that all they're looking for is corporate profits. And that's at the expense of the American worker. And we can't go back to that. We have to continue with Kamala Harris, with Tim Walz. They're not going to be worried about stock buybacks. They're going to worry about collective bargaining. They're going to worry about the PRO Act. They're going to worry about making sure our members get what they deserve and make it easier for our future members to organize and to join a union and collectively bargain to make sure that they're getting paid a fair wage with a health care, with a pension, with training, with all the things that we offer for a skilled, safe construction career professional.
Now, I was talking to somebody just recently, and they've informed me that they believe Trump and Project 2025 will go after the gem of the building trade, which is your apprenticeship programs. Is that reality? If a Trump presidency were to happen, do you think they would go after your apprenticeship programs?
They did the first term with the IRAPs. If you remember back towards the end of his presidency, they wanted an industry standard rather than the federal government standard. And what we have with registered apprenticeship, that's the holy grail. That's what we do. It's joint labor management. It's exactly where we go and how we, you know, train today's workers, tomorrow's workers. And he's already proven, you know, in his first administration, that he's going to be more aggressive. It took him 3 years to come after us the first time. He's going to come after us on day one. If he gets elected. And he's got the blueprint. He's had people for 4 years to be able to work on it, to make sure that on day one they can cut us out. And then, again, he's worried about lining his billionaire friends' pockets. He's not worried about my members. If my members were on the side of the street, he's not stopping for them. But he's going to stop if a billionaire's broken down and make sure he's okay.
Yeah, last line of questioning I've got for you, because obviously a lot of labor support here. But Sean Fain spoke and broke out that T-shirt. I've been saying every union should have that shirt with their logo on it. Any chance you're getting one of those? And if so, how do I get one?
Well, if and when we make them, we'll make sure you get them. We understand what the danger of another 4 years with Donald Trump. And we're going to be communicating that with our members every day for the next 73, 74, whatever the day count is left. And then I know in November, you know, we're going to be able to celebrate a victory of Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, and keep our members working and create more opportunities for us to bring more members into our union.
Oh, outstanding stuff. Brent Booker, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for the time, Rick. Take
Thanks
care.
Thanks so much. Brent Booker, General President of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So labor, labor, labor. That's all we've been seeing. And look, about time. You know, as I said on the show with Mac McNeil, up our friends and our affiliate up in Minnesota, take over one of the major parties. You want a labor party? Take one of them over. And it's what we've seen here at the Democratic National Convention. Labor has taken over the Democratic Party, and it is heart and soul, front and center. And here to share some thoughts on what we're seeing, I've asked my good friend Claude Cummings to come sit down, president of CWA, the Communication Workers of America, and also Carl Kinnebrew, the international president of the IUECA-CWA. Guys, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you for having us, Rick.
Yes, so thank you.
We are in, this is an amazing thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely amazing, man. The energy here has just been absolutely fantastic. And you're right. I think every night we've heard someone that has taken the stage and talked about the importance of labor in this country. And so you're right. Labor has really been on the forefront.
No, look, I've been to these before. Never like this.
Right.
Right.
The energy here around better wages, hours, conditions, the things we talk about every day has never been, I think, this high in a Democratic convention.
Yeah. Right. You're exactly right. And for the first time, and I've watched conventions for years, to have six presidents of unions actually come on stage and have an opportunity to present, I thought was absolutely historic and fantastic. The country got an opportunity to really see what the labor movement looks like. And how important this administration is to us.
And I'm going to throw out a shameless little promotion there for you.
Right.
You killed it, man. You knocked it out of the park.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. I liked the opportunity, and I thought I would put a little fire into the audience, and it appears that it worked out.
No, look, we need more of that. We need more labor leaders coming out and talking about the work that they do. And, Carl, I know you do just incredible work where you're at. Walk me through what your members are thinking as you're going through this election process. Because obviously there's all of this push in the mainstream media to try and cause division, to try and say, no, it's tell me what you're finding.
Well, our members are just ecstatic about the continuance of the support of labor. And especially we're in the manufacturing section of CWA. And as we know, as this country knows, and now the administration is just putting a period on his sentence that says manufacturing needs to come back to this country. And so it's an exciting time. There's an opportunity for our products to be built here. They shouldn't have never left our country, and it's exciting to see them coming back. And I'm excited to have yet another president that supports manufacturing and supports labor. And so our members are excited about it.
They got to be thrilled about it, because manufacturing means what?
Manufacturing means that the things are built here, that we have access to them, and it is the very thing that built this country.
Way too complicated. Jobs. Absolutely. Union jobs.
Absolutely. Right.
Those union jobs,
jobs
that make lives better.
Yeah.
That's what this is about.
Yeah.
And to have an administration as the Biden-Harris administration that has the central focus and an industrial policy for the first time in my life
to
reshore manufacturing, I'm elated.
Yes, I am too. And, you know, those jobs that, you know, that support the middle class, that build the middle class, and again, like I said, build this country, is the thing that everybody is excited about. It is an opportunity for every American to be able to take care of their families.
No, it's really that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Right. Right.
Union job, better life. Simple.
Right. And there's another part of that, if I can, if you don't mind me putting in.
By all means.
The administration has made it clear that they want these to be good union jobs, and they want these CEOs to sit down with us and negotiate labor peace agreements.
Yes.
That will allow those members, those employees, to form a union without any intimidation, any involvement of management.
No, as we've been saying here on this program, that's the original intent of the NLRA.
Right.
To encourage collective bargaining.
Exactly.
To encourage employers and employees to sit down, bargain collectively, solve problems, share wealth.
Right. Yep.
The idea that work should pay, all of those great things that we talk about, but also the idea of having an industrial policy for jobs for Carl, but also communication's a big freaking deal. Broadband,
man. Just as I stated a couple of nights ago, during the pandemic, we had children that had to go to fast food restaurants in order to pick up Wi-Fi, in order to be able to do homework. Shame on us and this country, you know, that should be the leading country when it comes to technology. But because of the infrastructure bill, we're going to be able to make sure that there's broadband that's installed by union members, good wages, good benefits, to every home in this community. I may not live to see the end of what happens in that infrastructure bill, but I'm so happy at this time to be a part of knowing that that's what's going to happen in the future.
In 20 years, is that what we're going to be talking about? We talk about Harry Truman all the time, the Electrification Act, that we put power and plumbing into every home in this country.
Right.
Is that going to be the Biden legacy? Internet in every home?
I think that not only that, but what about...
But good internet.
What, not just good internet, but what about pipes that have been pumping lead into homes, into bodies, right? What about these bridges that are so bad that need to be rebuilt? I mean, that infrastructure bill is going to do so much, but it will improve technology and make sure that every child in this country, every household will have access to the high-speed internet.
Yeah.
Now, this is an incredible moment, an incredible opportunity, and this is where I keep coming back to. It's not many times in my lifetime that I've looked at a political campaign and go, there's a real opportunity. The Obama 08, the hope and change, we were gonna do a whole bunch of stuff, fell a little short.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this as another one of those chances. If we make the right choices in November, and not just at the top of the ticket, but all the way down.
The entire ticket.
Right.
We got a real chance to rebuild and revive the American dream, don't we?
Yes.
That's
and not
exactly
just
right.
for some, but for everybody.
For everybody.
Right. Right. And just think about how great it would be to be able to win all three positions, the presidency as well as the hold on to the Senate, and make Hakeem Jeffries the leader of the House.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic. And we will get legislation passed that will be good for this country.
Yes. And we will be the get her done party.
That's right.
Look, I got to tell you, as a working class white guy, Tim Walz speaks volumes
to me.
Oh, man,
he's great.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you see that speech, Carl, last night?
Yes.
What gut reaction, what'd you think?
My gut reaction is that, you know, he's one of us. And, you know, he understands, especially coming out of schools, that we have to just create a pipeline. College is great, but not everybody's going to college. And the fact that we can create apprenticeships and a pathway for people who aren't going to college to still have high-paying jobs and get into these factories and become engineers and technicians is very exciting.
Claude, any thoughts on Walz's speech? How many times do you hear about somebody running for vice president who will push a kid out of a snowbank?
Man, I thought it was absolutely great. And what's wrong with the governor feeding kids, right? Because that's what the other party is saying about him. I thought he gave a great speech. I feel like he's the kind of guy that you feel like is your neighbor, that you can talk to about anything. I had an opportunity to visit with him for only a couple of seconds today at the Democratic governor's luncheon. And he is going to be good for the ticket. He's going to be good for this country.
Yeah.
No, this is a dream ticket because I think it is indicative of what the country is.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it meets a lot of needs for everyone. And the fact that, and this is for me the most important part of this, that both of them have come from meager beginnings.
Right.
That they know what it's like to miss a meal. They know what it's like to worry about a paycheck not going far enough. They worry about, hey, am I going to be able to pay the bills at the end of the week? That, to me, that's the kind of people I want in politics.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
And I think if you look at the amount of money that's been raised by Kamala now, And if you look at the poll numbers, because she's polling well in a lot of these states, it tells me that people in this country are tired of this meanness. They're tired of all of this crap, to be quite honest with you, that's coming out of Trump's mouth and the Republican Party. You know, they're ready to move forward in a peaceful way and end all this craziness that that is taking place.
As someone who's generally jaded around the political specter, the fact that we can have some joy.
Right.
I mean, that seems to be the thing.
That seems to be the thing.
The vibe is joy. I got to tell you, it's infectious.
Yes, it is.
So last question I've got for you. You know, obviously, we're in a bubble here. There's a lot of energy here, more than probably you've ever seen before. This is going to end.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go home.
Yeah.
What are you taking with you?
Well, listen. Okay.
Go ahead. No,
you go ahead.
No, we have to do the work. We have to stay consistent. We have to do the work. President Cummings has said time and time again, you know, this energy is great, but it has to continue. We cannot stop. We cannot take a break. We have to drive it home.
Yeah, what's the message to your members, Claude?
I will always believe that Hillary Clinton lost because they thought that Trump was so bad that they started planning for the future instead of keeping the pedal to the metal. My message, and I've said this everywhere I've spoken since I've been here, is that we've got to continue. This energy that we have here has to continue until Election Day.
There you go.
Simple as that.
If we do that,
we win.
Yes, sir.
Get out there, knock on doors, make phone calls, shake hands, kiss babies, whatever you got to do.
Whatever we need to
whatever
do.
Whatever we got to do.
Guys, I appreciate the
time.
Thank you.
Great talking with you.
You as well.
Thank you.
Claude Cummings and Carl Kinnebrew, our CWA friends. Look, this is an amazing environment. I'm glad the guys stopped by. We're going to take a quick break right back here from the UC here in Chicago. Back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So as we said, coming out of the convention, you were going to see a sizable bump, and I think Harris has gotten a good bump. The latest Angus Reid poll finds Harris picking up a five-point lead over Donald Trump, 47-42. The Farley Dickinson poll. That one's got it even further, a 50-43 advantage for Harris. And understand, you know, what came out of this convention, what I came home with, what we drove home thinking is, wow, that's what positivity looks like. That's what thinking about how we can have a better country moving towards that more perfect union status. That's what that looks like. And I'll tell you, the addition of Tim Walz to the ticket, you know, my wife said, man crush, huh? I mean, yeah, because he's the Democrat that I've been dreaming of. He's the candidate. You go, that's the guy. That's the person we need into power. Same thing with Kamala Harris. Someone that understands what it's like to live in our world. And this ticket to me is, again, on issue after issue, the differences, the contrast, never greater. You know, the idea that both parties are the same. No, they're not. Clearly not. On one hand, you got the billionaire. On the other hand, well, you got someone like Tim Walz who doesn't own any stock at all. Which, really very interesting to me. And a guy who, like you and me, you know, cashing a paycheck, hoping it makes the bills at the end of the month. These are the kind of people we need into office. I mean, the story about him, and I think I'm not going to stop telling this, so get used to it. This idea that he took a job coaching seventh grade track so he could pay off kids' lunch bills and then becomes governor and does away with that. That, to me, speaks volumes of who Tim Walz is. It's the kind of politician that, you know, my wife, as she pointed out, kind of politician I'd be. Life experience, use our government to make lives better,
really great stuff. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What did you think of the big shindig? And where do we go from here? As always, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Thanks for being here. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.